Pedro!
New location, huh?
Yeah, I think this is going to be good.
I think so, too.
I like the look of it.
We are here.
And I need to sell butters.
There you go. So if you haven't picked up on context clues yet, Scott and Jack here from the No Mulligans podcast, and we are in the putting lab at Franklin Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool piece that got added on, what was it, about a year ago at this point?
Not quite. It was April of last year, 23.
Yeah.
Yep, that we put it in.
So, I mean, we've got the best turf in here. We've got our full club building station over on the side in the tour shop. So you guys are really set up to go for any kind of just like exact tweak you need done to your equipment here.
Well, I think one of the things that gets missed is like the importance of getting fit for a putter. People go get fit for a driver and their irons and they're like, and they just buy a putter. I was like, well, okay. Like, did you actually understand? Like, I can change putters for you and totally change your numbers like that and massively improve your ability to make putts, which people don't think is important. They're like, come on. So I'd clean up the technique, and that was kind of the feedback people had, like, really, it matters that much? I said, yeah, we had one guy bring in 5 putters last week, and we looked at all of them. I was like, this one's out for this reason. Length affects that one, weight affects that one, and then I put him in a new one, and it was worlds better. Like, you had perks from this one. Path was good on this one. Attack angle was good on that one. Face was good on that one, but none of them all matched up. Well, put them in a different putter, and wham, all of them were good.
It's so crazy, too. We were talking about it before the camera was rolling here, about just like how the putter is the most personal club in the bag.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, you're making the most strokes out of your entire score with your putter.
Yeah.
So for those of you who are like, oh my God, I need to go get fit for a new driver, how many times do you actually pull a driver in a round?
Yeah, 12 to 14.
And how many putts do you have around?
Like 30 plus for most people?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Micah had 23 the other day, made shot 63 with no bogeys.
Still, the fact that we're talking about 23 putts.
Right, it's still more than any other club.
It's still more than any other club, and we're talking about how few putts he had.
Yep.
So come on out here to the putting lab at Franklin Bridge. Get dialed in. We've got TrackMan for putting. It's which a lot of people don't know is actually available to us, but we can actually get so much data to the point that you will leave here with a putter that is built to your specific stroke.
Yeah, and if you get one of last year's putters, you come anytime soon, get one of last year's putters, we'll get you 15% off. So as you've heard me say, from year to year, most companies don't have a massive uptick in improvement, but every 3 to 5 product cycles. So
right.
This year to last year, not anything majorly different. I think the Callaway putters, which is the Odyssey line, is definitely going to see an uptick from their last year to this year, but pretty much everybody else is going to pretty hold steady. So you've got the Spider putter, super popular. So we're only bringing in the things that each company does really well. So Scotties are Scotties. So people love Scotties. You can get Scotties. The Never Compromise line is really awesome this year with a custom fitting system that we can do that I think is awesome. So it combines teaching with fitting. That to me is like, oh, this is so great. And then Ping, we're going with their classic putters. Now, they have this B-type putter that's coming back that Ping's bringing. It has this, like, it's shaped like a B on the back. It was super popular when it was out in the, like, early 2000s, late 90s. So that's coming back. Spider, Odyssey's Odyssey, and then Seymour, Seymour. So, I mean, we have the best from each company here now. Last year, we just had a mix of everything.
So I got a question for you before we go into what we're talking about today. Would you rather... This is kind of going into our this or
great.
That a little
great.
Bit. But would you rather go to Goodwill, get a putter out of their sporting goods section, have it custom fit to you, or get something straight off the rack and no fitting associated with it?
Ooh. Well, A, I wouldn't go there. I'd come here.
There you go. I would too.
I'd come here so we can actually look at real data with the putter. A custom fit putter trumps something off the rack every time, unless you just happen to get lucky. And people do. Like, you know, it happens. It's just not common. You know, it's maybe 1 in 10, probably less than that. So,
well,
yeah, I mean, I think it'd be better some piece of junk off of the wall that's custom fit for you than not. So
I would tend to think so as well.
And most people have putters that are too long.
Well, come here and get a great putter and a fantastic fitting and go and sink some putts out here.
So speaking of putting,
Yeah, this rolls in perfectly to what we were talking about.
I know, right? Like, Scotty's so bad at putting. It's like, well, I mean, kind of.
So we've gotten into our topic. For those of you who are somehow not tuned in to this world right now, Scottie Scheffler has almost tiger-like numbers from tee to green, but once he gets on the putting green, it seems to all fall apart from there. So there's so many people who are saying that he's just putting bad. Scott, would you like to raise a different
point? Yeah, I do. Could he improve his putting? Yes. I'm not like going to be polar opposite, but I don't think people are seeing what I'm... Well, I know they're not seeing what I'm seeing because the conversation would be different. So, at Riviera, Scotty was number one tee to green. And he was number one around the green through two rounds. My data doesn't support that. So, BPN, OP is what we used to call it. It's called SA now. It stands for side approach, which is the side you want to approach from. So, and it fits the approach shot, right? Like, it just makes a lot more sense. And the BPN ball pin nearest edge, it's where you want the ball to be placed. And then proximity on first attempt. All of which are tee to green type statistics, right? So, like, when you look at that, so remember, the data from strokes gained on the PGA Tour, based on how they measure it, Scotty was number one. He's not even in, I'm going to pull this up so you can see it, Jack, on my phone. He's not even in the top 20 on mine. Not even close.
And why should somebody who's listening to this for the first time be like, wow, Scott, like, you talk a big game, but like, why should I believe you over what the tour tracks?
Because it's data from the tour measured in a different way. He's looking at it through a different lens, right? So Scotty's probably trying to fix Scotty's putting. I'm like, it's not actually that bad. Scotty should have shot a much different number than he actually shot in that round, which is really important.
Well, you pull up the data too. When I was watching, you hear so much from the color commentators on Scotty was worked so much on his putting. He's brought in the best of the best to help work on it. It's just something in his motion, but there's a reason why he's been number one in the world and was first on the money list last year. So what has changed from then to now? That seems to be the question.
So some of it has to do, he's hitting a few less of the BPNs this year than he was last 2 years, based on what I haven't tracked every single tournament, right? Because I don't want to stay up till 4 a.m. every night. But when we look at data, I'm going to pull it up here. We'll look at it zoomed in a little bit, Jack. So Scotty finished the tournament at 8 under par. Good job, right? T10. Okay, so everybody's like, oh, he should have won the golf tournament if his putting was better. He would be winning. It's like, well, he's not making up 9 shots from his putting, I can tell you that. Okay. So his 72-hole final score was 8 under par. Calculated based on Golf Decoded, should have shot 5.75 under par. So he's actually ahead of what he should have shot by 2.25 shots.
So that makes me feel like his putting might actually be saving him some strokes.
Yeah, it is. Like, you beat your number by either hitting it stupid close or short game. Like, that's really the only way to beat your projection.
And what do we know about Scotty and what do we know about the Riv? I think he probably hit it way close on most of his shots. I think he probably made up that in his approach game.
Right, so we'll look at it in parts here. So, Tate, you're going to have to do a little bit of work here, but is to actually show this chart and let it run for a minute. But is this particular chart, you get to see where he ranks. So he should have shot that. Now, strokes ahead or behind of his Golf Decoded score is pretty high. So I don't have every guy in the top 25, but I have almost 20 guys in here already. So what you're looking at is he was projected at 5.75 under par. The highest was Schauffele at negative 10.15. So the only person behind him is Jason Day at negative 4.76. So I don't have Taylor in this event. So these are your top 20 guys, 25, 23-ish guys. So you're looking at it and you're going, wow, like, dude's getting smoked by everybody. Like, when you look at this, now Matsuyama wedged and putted the crap out of it the last 2 days, and he hit it to nothing in the last day. Like, that's how, he hit two shots that were less than a foot. So you know, that's how you beat your number. So if you look at it, you're going, all right, so who's my next closest? His next closest is a whole shot ahead of him at 6.8 under par. It's like, wait, how? Or 6.7 under par, right? 7.7. Fleetwood tied him. Then you have Finau. Finau finished at 6. He basically shot his number at 6.86. Then you have Burns was at 6.9. Those are three guys ahead of him. And then you go to 7. You go to 7.4 or 7.3. So, like, you're a shot and a half behind five guys. Like, like, mathematically, you're not going to win the golf tournament. Even if you happen to putt way better, you're still not going to get... You might get to 11 under par, maybe. Maybe 12, but you don't get to where you're going to get to. You just not.
The one thing, too, that I think is really interesting about this data is that when you get to courses like Augusta, like Riv, like even, I mean, it's hard to put Old Course in here, but just some of these major championship level courses where if you're not hitting the right spots on the golf course, you're getting penalized, right? Mm-hmm. Riv is exactly like that. You need to hit it on those greens or else that, or else their fairway grass, gosh, it's the funky one, starts with a K, or their grass type, their fairway grass.
Not Poana.
Poana's the greens. They have Poana greens and gosh, it's weird.
You have bent grass, you have Bermuda grass, you have.
It's a funky one. People in the comments. Anyway, they would just eat up the golf ball. So you'd see a lot of guys that take a lot of. They would take wedges where normally they'd take putters because they're afraid that their golf ball was going to get eaten up in that fairway grass. So, long story short, this data to me, I haven't validated it in my own like processing of it, but it seems like. This is a type of course where it's useful to keep this data because you have to hit it. You can't get away with hitting it in bad places.
No, you can't. And so here's an even crazier one. So I take their two round averages like, and then project those to four rounds, like if they were to maintain those averages. So Scotty's projected 72 hole round finish, he was at 4 under after two rounds, was the lowest of everybody in that group at -2.33. So he actually got better the next two rounds, tee to green, Saturday, Sunday, by 3.5 shots, basically. So he improved substantially over those next two rounds. And so you're looking at it going, like, how's that? But Scott, come on, like, strokes gained is this. Remember what strokes gained is. Strokes gained is a measure of you against everybody else. It doesn't include slopes and tiers. It doesn't equate putts as being equal in level of difficulty, right? So, like, you have to look at it through that lens. So, as I'm tracking data for Scotty, I'm looking through this going, well, there's a three putt. Well, where did he three putt from? Like, he's on the wrong side of the hole putting, and he putts it. It's a difficult putt, whether it be uphill or downhill. It could be up over a ridge or up over a significant slope or across a significant slope or down over a significant slope. I don't care if you hit 88% of your greens. Like, you're on the wrong side of the hole too many times putting over these tiers, and then he leaves himself 4.5 feet. It's like he's only 77% from 3 to 5 feet. Well, of course he was. There's so much pressure riding on that putt because he's got to save par from a bad spot, and you're not supposed to make bogey from hitting on the green. So, like, you think about all the, like, human factors of there's more pressure on that. And then he's not great on long putts outside of 50 feet. So that's just a lag putting thing. So even when he's in the BPN, he doesn't putt well.
Yeah. And you're exactly right. To kind of conceptualize that for people who play here at Franklin Bridge, it would be like on hole four, if you have a front pin location, it'd be like hitting it on the back of the green where you have to go over that huge slope in order and downhill no less to get it to stop, where it's like technically the PGA Tour is counting that as a green hit for Scotty.
Correct. But and they're like, oh, he's 35 feet. He should have two putted.
Right.
Well, that putt's not the same as the putt from 35 feet from the other side of the hole.
But I'll guarantee you that those who are locals here at Franklin Bridge, you would rather hit it short of the green on four and then kind of putt it through the fringe in order to get it to the hole. Then
It would depend on how close the pin is to the edge of the tier.
You're right.
If the pin's close to the edge of the green, it may be fine putting over that.
You're right.
But like that's the part that we're measuring, that we're mattering. Exactly. Is like if the edge of the green is closer, then that's your nearest edge, so it would be okay to be over that ridge. But if you're too close to that ridge,
yes,
then the level of difficulty rises substantially, even just on a pin that moves 6 feet. Like, you move a pin 6 to 9 feet, and it completely changes the way the hole's played, how close you can hit it, the angle you should play in from. People are like, man, that just seems like a lot. But it's really simple. You can play some basic logic once you learn the three data points. Like, play some basic logic in your set. So, like, it's looking at those things and going, well, how do we, you know, how do we deal with that? With how good Scotty is at hitting the golf ball, can you imagine if he had this information and knew exactly where he needed to miss? The pressure would come off of his putting so fast. It just would.
100%. It's kind of wild though, because like at the PGA Tour level, these guys are literally getting so many chances to look at the golf course to where there's no excuse to hit it in the wrong location, right? My question to you, Scott, is that if you're listening to this podcast and you're trying to go out and play around with your buddies and you're trying to at least use a rough version of BPN, how would they go about doing that?
So a rough version of that looks like this. So if you have a front left pin, let's go easy ones. If you have a front pin, you want to hit it past it. If you have a back pin, you want to hit short of it. If you have a right pin, you want to hit left of it. If you have a left pin, you want to hit it right of it. Anywhere right of it. Like, doesn't matter. For a front pin, anywhere long of it. Well, what if I'm 30 yards long? Look, you're 30 yards long. That's fine. Like, you're past it. So the value of hitting it in there is nearly a third of a shot. So you also have to keep in mind, like, you want to keep it decently close. So then you start thinking about, okay, well, if I were to go 30 yards long, that would be too far. What would bring me to 20? Right. And so you start to work your way down. How do I measure proximity with that? So if you have front left pin, you know, you can kind of be long right of it. You can even be short right of it, but you got to be far enough right. You can even be long left of it, but you got to be far enough. You got to be long enough. So like, it's pretty basic all in all. Like, if you've never used it, or you don't know the golf course, you don't have a pin location sheet, you don't have all that stuff, like, it's actually pretty straightforward as you look at it. And you're going to be right probably at least 14 out of 18 times.
And what you just said is perfect and exactly what I wanted people who are listening to this to understand, because it doesn't have to be hard. Oh. It's one of those things that's easy to learn, hard to master.
Right.
But if you can just know what side of the green to hit it to based on where the flag is,
it's okay if you miss the green because it's an easy chip.
Yes, but I think one thing that I want to like reiterate is there's been this stereotype in golf where it's like you always want to be below the hole. It's like,
no, you
not
don't.
Not necessarily, right?
No, you don't.
But we want to be on the right side of the hole, depending on where that is, right?
Correct.
So it's just kind of changing that stereotype from actually going off of a phrase, if you will, to actually understanding golf course strategy and management.
Right. So sometimes being in the BPN has a downhill putt. Sometimes it's an uphill putt. So it's not, they're not made equal. It's not always have an uphill putt. It's understanding the level of severity that you're in. And like, when I look at the Scotty situation, I'm like, I have to bang down the door here. Like, I'm sorry, that data's wrong. It's right in what it's measuring, but it's wrong in the fact that it's going to lead Scotty. It's going to lead everybody to look at the wrong thing. Like, it's not just his putting that's keeping him from winning golf tournaments. It's where is that ball placed? Like, he should not win that golf tournament unless he just like insanely puts the lights out of it, hits it to nothing, which he didn't do as much in this tournament. Like, that's like, sorry, you just didn't do that. And when you went for par fives and two, or you tried to drive greens, you were far from the hole. Like, sorry, man, tee to green isn't what you think it is. And it measures exactly what it's measuring, but it's measuring the wrong thing. And I think it's important that you understand that ours is a measure of you against the golf course, the way it's designed, the slopes of the green, and how it plays out in the human nature and psyche. Strokes gained is you against everybody else. I'm sorry, that's not the game that you're playing.
What you just said, that's exactly right. It's like, it's not the game that you're playing. I will see those stats, and it's just, yeah, it's the... The DNA of where those stats come from is not based on the sport.
Right.
It's not you versus me. It's the golf course is playing defense against you, who's playing offense.
And like, what is the anatomy of a right shot? Somebody had told me, like, there's another professional that said, you know, angles don't matter so long as you're playing from the fairway. I was like, well, angles do matter angles don't matter if you're taking it into the normal context of the pins on the right, you play to the left. But if you're taking it in context to slopes as they're built onto the green and how the ball will move when it gets in close to those slopes and how
and a player your orientation crosses, to those slopes.
That's correct. Yeah. Like whether you're coming into it or whether you've already hit it up to the green, like your orientation relative to those and where your ball is going to be placed, that matters. So if you take it from the normal sense, you're correct. Angles don't matter.
So I've got a fun story to tell you here. It's not a golf course story, but I recently hooked back up my old Xbox and fired up PGA Tour 2K21. Okay.
This is funny.
It was fantastic. And I was like, you know what? Like I'm playing my little career mode where I have my golfer and my golfer doesn't have the best stats, which means that I can't just go out there and play like Scotty, right? Right. So I'm like, you know what? Let's see if we can use Scott's like BPN.
No, you didn't.
I did, I swear. And it was actually so much fun because as a character in that game, I have way more control over the golf ball than I would normally have right. in my round.
So you can hit it closer and hit it on the correct yes, side, not just hit it on the correct side.
Correct. But the reason why I bring this funny anecdote up is because I realized while I was playing that game, it just the BPN just kind of clicked for me. It's not necessarily about where it is next to the slope on the green, but your orientation to those slopes on your approach shot that
right,
matter.
Right.
And that, I think, is where a lot of people are not going to see the benefits of BPN and OP because either one, they don't have the skill to get it there every single time, or two, they haven't seen the game in that way to understand
it. Yeah, it's mostly number two.
Yeah.
Most people have enough skill to hit it somewhere over there
in the general area,
yeah. right? Because it's such a broad placement of the golf ball for the most part, and so it's learning how to like utilize that to your advantage and find your way around it, and it's a game changer. I pulled data this last week from Hayden Buckley and Scott Stallings from the Waste Management. One of them made the cut, one of them didn't, and looking at them, like, well, Hayden Buckley's his big problem is when he misses the BPN, his score goes way up. So when he misses the BPN, his scoring in from there over the four round or over the yeah he was four rounds. Scott Stallings was two. He was I think three over par or two over par. Two over par for those four rounds. On the ones that he hit the BPN, he was eight under. Like talk about a. Or 10 under, because he finished 8 under in the tournament. Yeah, so you're talking 2 over versus 10 under. That's a 12-shot difference. And that's with more holes on the hit BPN side, where you have more opportunities to make birdies and bogeys. Like, the one that's hit less, like, you hit fewer. I mean, the ones you missed the BPN were less than the ones you hit the BPN, right? So you're like, well, you're 2 over on those. If you keep having more of those, you'd be even more over par, right? Like, wow, so hitting the BPN really does matter. Yes, it does.
This is a classic example of the 80-20 rule. 20% of the inputs are responsible for 80% of the outputs.
Right.
Where it's like, Scotty does not have to reinvent his putting stroke.
No.
He just needs to hit it in the right place, and then the 80% will take care of itself.
Right. And, like, sure, he leaves himself, or he hits his long putt sometimes. Like, when he misses a long putt from the BPN, he'll leave it 4 feet on the wrong side. Like, he'll miss the BPN on the putt. Not every time, but a lot of times that first putt where he misses the 3.5-footer is now from the wrong side.
And for a lot of you people,
which is a harder putt.
Correct. For a lot of people too who are who watch tournament golf or watch the PGA Tour or watch any kind of golf, if you see somebody, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you see somebody hitting some sort of crazy slider or something that moves drastically in the putt, more than likely they have missed their BPN.
There's a good chance they've missed the BPN. There's less slope. Now, sometimes there's still going to be a lot of slope depending on how far away the other slopes are from the hole. But if you see a lot of break, there's a good chance that's the case. Or you see a putt, they run way by. There's a decent chance that happens to be a downhill putt or an uphill putt. They're trying to get close from a long distance and they just blow it by the hole. Now they missed the BPN. I was like, dude, like, no, that's not where you hit it. Stop it. You guys are good enough not to hit it there. Like, and it's just not surprising when you're going through them going, where's the bogey? Where's the bogey? Where's the bogey? Oh, there it is. No surprise.
The classic example, I forget which tournament was Victor Hovland last year when you were mm-hmm. like, this dude's data is literally saying that he's going to collapse any second now. And then he made that legendary quad.
Right. And so, like, the PGA Tour coach I'm spending time with, he's like, yeah, but, like, how often would he do that, right? Like, he's the eternal pessimist, right? Which is fine, which I need somebody to hold the data in check. I was like, yeah, but he missed the wrong, he hit on the wrong side and he hit it far from the hole. And then it turned into this game of boom, 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 boom. You don't know when it's going to get you. I can just tell you on the average, if you keep missing it, I don't know if it's going to turn into a string of four bogeys, or I don't know if it's going to turn into one, two doubles, a triple and a bogey. Like,
it also doesn't mean that they will fire a 6-7 under on day one and then collapse on day two, day three. Like,
right. Sometimes just coming back to the averages, you just don't make as many putts.
And sometimes, like you said, on days where you could shoot a million under, but you're not hitting any data points, it could just be that he's hitting it to nothing every single time. He's just having an out of this world ball striking day.
Right. And that happens. They're that good.
Totally.
They have days they hit it stupid close. Or, and you saw Matsuyama's frustrating, like, he does that on one of the shots, hits it to 6 inches, and then they're like, what is he upset about? He wasn't trying to hit it there, but it actually happened to work out really good.
So, question for you then, on the topic of Tiger Woods and mm-hmm. Scottie getting compared together,
mm-hmm.
what's the difference between Tiger and Scottie if they're comparing Scottie to 2000's Tiger in his tee to green per se?
So, I don't know, right? Because I don't have...
You don't have the data for
it. I don't have
it,
but the what data would you guess? Prove. My suspicion, based on hearing Tiger talk about the game being played differently when Koepka's playing majors, like hearing some of the Golf Digest videos that they put out for a while that Tiger talks about strategy, he's like, there are guys out here playing checkers, there are guys out here playing chess, and there are guys, very, very few, playing elite chess. And he's playing elite chess. And like, Tiger would miss fairways, but they'd be in the correct location. You play from the correct angle. Like, I think Tiger was playing some angles. I think when he missed greens, he was missing them in better spots. Obviously, there are times when he pulled off certain shots, like the famous behind 16 at Augusta, right? That's a missed BPN and it's far from the hole. That's just finding a way to will it into the hole. And that's just like, that's how good he was. Like, his short game was phenomenal. And I think his edges, if you probably compare where he was relative to slopes, there's a good chance that he's in better locations than Scotty was.
I wish we could, and I'm sure everybody on earth who plays golf wishes this, but I wish we had him for 15 minutes to talk about it, because I remember he was giving Golf Digest did a video on him, and he was giving Dwayne Wade a lesson. And Dwayne Wade just, goes down there and places the tee right in the middle of the two tee markers. And he's like, so where do you decide to, like, tee off from? Do you just hit the middle or just feel like going left or right sometime? And he goes, no, no, no. And then he goes, it's all about angles, man. And so, like, I'm curious if Tiger Woods had a psyche in his elite days that was similar to BPNOP.
I think he knew where to place his golf ball. And I think he would, I think he knew how to get there to some degree. And when he didn't, he knew how to, like, he could properly assess the level of difficulty of the situation. Remember the one where he's flubbed the chip twice?
Yeah.
And he flubs it once and then he holds it?
Yep.
Well, that's actually in the BPN in that location. It's a downhill chip towards water. Oh, this is a really hard shot. It's like, well, it is. It's not an easy shot for anybody. But, like, it's actually not as hard as we perceive it to be, given the context of understanding what's really happening.
In theory, it was a good miss.
Right. He missed a green and then he flubs it, which is the right place to flub it.
No, I'm talking about the flub was a good miss.
Right.
In theory.
Right. So, like, the flub was left in the BPN and then he holds it. He hit it a little bit closer, so he's closer and in the BPN still. And it goes in. Like, it seems like this drastic miracle, and there's a certain sense of resiliency in Tiger to be able to do that, to will something in there. But there's also, like, it wasn't as bad as we perceive it to be on the surface.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, one of the most powerful components of BPN, SA, and POA in Golf Decoded, is it helps you properly assess the level of difficulty of the situation you are in.
Bingo. And I think Tiger was able to do exactly that while also processing other things like the mental game between him and somebody else, or just where he is in the 72-hole stretch compared to the field. I think he was able to take some of the data points and some of the not human, let's say, qualitative data
that
subjective. Wasn't available to him. Yeah, subjective data.
And so I think, because he was, when you look at Mark Brody's book on Tiger Woods and strokes gained approach, he was one of the highest strokes gained approach ever. So relative to the field, right? So, But then you start asking the question of, like, what is it that made his strokes gained approach so much better than everybody else? And, like, you could actually, there's, in theory, a situation in which Scottie Scheffler's and Tiger's strokes gained approach, let's assume they were exactly the same, but they could be entirely different from a golf decoded standpoint because of Tiger's placement relative to those things versus Scottie's placement relative to those things. And that, to me, is something worth pursuing, and it's, I'm not going to chase it because it's too much data collecting, but I don't have access to it. But it's different, and I it's important that we start seeing the game in a new light. Whether you want to or not, like, this stuff is real. Oh, it doesn't affect me. Shoot, we sat on number 4 one day. Everybody's, like, least favorite hole. There were guys that the pin was located in the back right, which meant that the BPN was short and left, and it meant that you couldn't hit it past the 150 marker. So we had guys that were, like, near the cart path on 4, those that play here on the regular. That's a long shot in. And we had guys that were, like, down near the hazard, near the trees. The proximity of the guys that played from short of the 150 in various distances from the hole versus the guys that hit it past the 150 that day, it was no, like, it, this is just general public, weren't even close. It was totally different. These are, you figure the average handicap player is 18. We watched 8 groups, 9 groups. So what is that? 36 people. That's enough sample size.
Where's the pin again?
Back right.
Okay.
So it's kind of tucked behind that. Anybody that was past the 150 post is going to have to come across that slope. And they either come up short of it, go right of it, or go way long of it to try to get it back there. And it just doesn't. There's something about it that the angle matters from the visual component. Like, angles don't matter. Like, you have to account for the human perception.
I don't even know if it's the visual thing. Because to me, when I hit it short and to me, when I hit it long, my mindset to for me personally is not that much different. However, where it differs, and I think this is completely it's not in my head, it's just literally golf course design, where if you're past the 150 there on 4, think about it. If you have a short pin, you're hitting it into that big slope, so you might even have a backstop that brings it closer to the hole.
Yeah, that's all a part of this whole thing. Yeah.
Or if you're in the back, you don't even have to deal with it entirely. So if you hit it short, you don't have to go over it, right? So it's like,
but again, that's what relaxes the mental side of it.
If you understand it.
Correct. And I don't even think you have to understand it. Like, these people don't understand this at all. They're just generic public playing.
Yeah.
And, like, dude, that was an incredible shot from there. I can't believe, like, you heard those types of things. I was like, it really wasn't actually that hard of a shot. It was actually the best place he could be playing from. And we watched 2 guys in a row play from basically the same spot, like at 165 yards, which is probably going to be a 6-iron or 7-iron for these guys. And the average proximity between the two of them was less than 15 feet. They weren't the only ones. Multiple people did that. But, like, it was phenomenal to see, like, wow, it works for the general public. They just don't even know it's happening. But what if you did know it was happening? And what if you could place the ball in those spots? The game would be entirely different. You play it differently. You think about it differently. You'd relax more and, like, oh, actually, this isn't too bad of a shot. It's wild, dude. Like, it flies in the face of everything that's out there right now.
If you're a golf nut and a golf nerd, some of these places that the tour goes to will have topography of the maps that you can find. So if you're a golf nut and a golf nerd, you can go get Golf Decoded on Amazon.
Yep.
Understand.
We're going to rewrite it to change OP to SA and a few other things.
So you got BP, SA, and POA as well. And you can actually go in and check if some of these guys are hitting it in the right spots.
Right.
It really is cool.
Right. I think you should check. Well, shout out to had another player that's gone through all this. He's a low single digit handicap, and he played out here the other day. He hit every fairway. He hit 12 greens, which is like less than a half a shot less than the tour average. And he shot 76. I was like, what's your BPNs, OPs, and or SAs and POA? It's like, well, SAs were high at, I think, 13, 14, BPNs were 10, which isn't enough, and his POA was 860. So, like, oh, hit a lot of greens, awesome, but, like, hey man, it's not just about hitting the green. So, like, this allowed us to expand. I was like, well, given those data points, you should have shot close to a half a stroke over par. So cool, hitting 12 greens doesn't matter that much. So like
he was averaging 47 feet into. Yeah, that's nuts.
Of course you're not going to make very many. He had a couple three putts. Well, of course you had a couple three putts because you're really far away from the hole.
Yeah, it sounds like you got
to. You need to work on your long distance putting so that you at least don't make more than you should. Like, it's, there's more to the story than hitting greens.
You know what I love about this too? And this will be my final thought here. Is that a lot of people will say, like, if you had the chance to, you know, like, you can, it's like a Matrix moment, you know, red pill, blue pill, where it's like, if you had to hit every single green in regulation or like make or two putt for the rest of your life kind of thing. And most people would say, I'm just going to hit every green in regulation. But this exact example is proof that, okay, fine, you can hit every green in regulation. It doesn't mean that you're going to putt lights out.
I would take, can I place my tee ball on the correct side every single time? I'll take that all day long.
Really?
Because it gives me my best chance at doing the rest.
Right, yeah. And if you think about it,
I might three putt some of the time, that's fine.
If you know the pins, you know your course, and you know where they're at, like, you can actually, like, hitting the right side of the, of, it's not even of the fairway, really. It's just the right side of the hole.
Right.
Like,
over there.
Yeah. Like,
over here.
To the right. You know, if you can do that, you, I guarantee you, this guy would have had a better score than he did.
Oh, yeah. Like, he just missed too many BPNs, and his proximity wasn't tight at the same time. You can't do that. You can't do that. So, like, but he hit every fairway. It's not just about hitting every fairway, though. It's about getting on the correct side to give yourself the chance. And if you're not on the correct side, then you better get the next one on the correct side.
Well, and if you're saying I hit every fairway, it's like, well, if you think about it from our data perspective, you didn't. You didn't really. Because you're just redrawing the fairway on the right side that it needs to go on.
Yeah, it actually needs to be over here.
It actually needs the whole, yeah, it needs to be the left side of the fairway and the right side of then that rough. Or the left side of the rough.
Or the left side of the rough. Yeah, yeah.
Left, left, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's different, man. It's, and people are like, but I need to hit it from the fairway. I was like, no, you don't. How about you learn how to hit it from the rough? There's no rough on the driving range. You don't get to practice it. But like, learning how to hit it from the rough, you take spin off, you can chase it back to flags, like you can miss hit it, chunk it, and it still roll all the way up there. Like, you chunk one out of the fairway, it's going nowhere. You chunk one out of the rough, it's still gonna tumble forward. Like, there's value to missing it
in the right spot.
Sometimes in the rough.
Because sometimes too, like, let's say you got a pin in the back, like if you chunk something, or if you just hit it short of the hole, it's going to roll closer. Mm-hmm. So you got to play the geometry of the course to your advantage.
And it's really simple. I know we're making it sound kind of complicated, but it's like, hit it anywhere over there off the tee. And if you can't get out in the fairway, you can't get it to the green, just punch it out into that same side on a good angle. Hit it anywhere on this side of the line when you approach the green. And keep your proximity within reason. Like, and if your proximity is not great, but you're in the BPN, it's really not that hard of a chip if you miss the green. It's really pretty straightforward. And you should be able to make no worse than bogey. At least you're not making doubles. Especially for our average listener, right? Like, it just is eliminating unnecessary mistakes. Like, Scott Stallings is in some ways, you know, struggling with the driver. He's right and left. But one of the ones that he was right on, like, you want to blame the driver. Like, oh, if I just didn't hit it over there. It's like, well, then he lays it up or mishits it. It's 50 yards from the hole on the wrong side. He's missed the SA. And then hits that shot up, misses the BPN in a bunker 40 feet from the hole. Like, you're outside the 25-foot window we like when you miss a BPN. And then hits that up on the green, then two putts for double. You're like, you actually, the tee shot wasn't the thing that killed you. It was the three shots that followed. It's like, you just compounded. That's what makes a whole new meaning to compounding errors, and that's a whole other conversation for another day. But
love that.
There's way more, like, when you pull this data back, it actually tells us what the game really is. And it's you against the golf course, not you against me.
I love it.
That's it.
Love it, love it. Well, thanks, guys, for listening to the first episode here in the Putting Lab here at Franklin Bridge. We really appreciate you guys taking a look. If you guys want to learn a little bit more about what we talked about, Scott's book, Golf Decoded, is going to be in the show notes, and as well as it's on Amazon as well. So if you guys want to go read a little bit more in depth about what these stats mean, and if you want to start implementing them into your own game, that's a great place to get started. There's video explanations as well that you're going to be able to see throughout the book. So rest assured, you will not be left alone or confused at the end of this book. You're going to be shooting lower scores. That's for sure. So thanks, y'all, so much for listening, watching, viewing, subscribing. And we really appreciate you guys. Remember, Play With The Pod is happening. We're changing the date just simply because it's Easter weekend that weekend, and we didn't even realize it. So we're going to be changing the date. Stay tuned for that. It'll be mentioned. You actually would have already heard it before this podcast starts. So we'd love to see you there. And thanks so much for listening, watching, viewing, subscribing. We'll see you on the next one. Peace.